to the Student Press Law Center podcast for November 2009, a monthly rundown of news about legal developments affecting the student media. The Student Press Law Center is an advocate for student voices. We recognize the essential role that free speech and a free press play in a democratic society. The SPLC is committed to nurturing and protecting those freedoms for the next generation. For more information about the center's work, go to www.splc.org. I'm Frank Lomonti, Executive Director of the Student Press Law Center, and thanks for joining us. Tarleton State University in Stephensville, Texas, has just learned a very expensive lesson about withholding crime information from the public. The U.S. Department of Education recently fined the college more than $137,000 for violating the federal Gene Cleary Act. Tarleton State's president has said any violations were unintentional, and the university says it will appeal that fine. The Cleary Act is an absolutely essential tool that every college journalist needs to know and understand. It requires every college or university that accepts any federal money, which is just about all of them, to maintain up-to-date crime logs accessible to the public on demand, to distribute accurate yearly reports about serious crimes on campus, and to issue warnings if a dangerous criminal poses a threat to public safety. Sadly, even though both the Cleary Act and state open records laws very clearly obligate colleges to disclose information about campus crime, journalists regularly contact the Student Press Law Center with horror stories about how even very routine requests for police records are met with hostility, stonewalling, and at times outright fabrication. The SPLC recently dealt with one situation in which a college in Texas was requiring journalists to sign a legal liability waiver before they released copies of police incident reports, which of course sent a message of intimidation that somehow just asking for a police report meant that you might get sued. Access to crime information is such a persistent issue for student journalists that the SPLC recently reissued its guidebook called Covering Campus Crime, which is one of our most popular and widely used reference publications. College student journalists are really the public's first line of defense in monitoring the safety of campuses. We can't assume that professional newspapers and TV stations will have the manpower anymore to go rooting around in campus police records to check them for accuracy. So this is a real opportunity, and it's also a real responsibility for the college media. Two college journalists who seized that opportunity are with us on the SPLC podcast today. Aaron Cooper and Julie Vragel broke the story in Tarleton State's newspaper, the JTAC, disclosing that their school had underreported its crime statistics for sex offenses, burglaries, and drug crimes. It was their reporting that led to the Department of Education investigation resulting in the DOE's recent fine. We're also joined by Keith Elkins of the Freedom of Information Foundation of Texas, a nonprofit organization that supported the excellent work of these student journalists. Keith Elkins, Julie Vragel, and Aaron Cooper, thank you for joining us today. Let's start with Keith Elkins laying a little groundwork and explaining just what the Freedom of Information Foundation of Texas does, and also please explain the foundation's Light of Day program that supported these students' reporting work.
Be glad to, Frank. The Freedom of Information Foundation of Texas is actually the oldest education and advocacy group in the state. We've been in existence for more than 30 years, basically trying to educate the public and elected officials about the Texas Public Information and Open Meetings Acts, as well as the Federal Public Information Act. The Light of Day Project is a specific program that we do in consort with universities all over the state of Texas. It focuses on education about the Texas Public Information and Open Meetings Act and helps protect student journalists by making sure that they understand what their rights are when it comes to using public records or public documents, especially in the pursuit of stories. Now, we've thought for a long time that the education that we help provide with the Light of Day Project was providing an invaluable service, and of course, these two student journalists have certainly brought that to light with this fine for Tarleton State. And Frank, you mentioned earlier that under the Cleary Act, which the university was fined under, and it was that particular law that was named for Gene Cleary, who was raped and killed at her dorm room in Pennsylvania back in 1986. And that is significant because in this particular case at Tarleton State, there were 10 sex offenses on campus that went unreported until these two student journalists brought it to light.
Gosh, well, Julie and Aaron, why don't you start us off before we talk about how you went about this project? First, just sort of introduce us to where you are and what you're doing right now.
Okay, this is Aaron speaking. And this project started about 3 years ago. I actually, ironically enough, I think it was exactly 3 years ago. I was a senior in Dan Malone's news writing class, and Malone has worked with students at UNT under the Light of Day project, and they had done investigative reporting just like this on campus crime. And I believe it was his first year at Tarleton teaching, and he had realized that no one had looked into Tarleton's campus crimes and compared what they had reported to the Department of Education under the Clery Act to actual police reports that came from the campus police department. So when I was in his class, he asked if anyone would like to volunteer to fill out an open records request and request that information from the Tarleton Police Department. And I was the brave soul who raised my hand and did that, not knowing that, you know, 3 years later we would still be talking about this. And I graduated in December of 2006, so at the end of that semester, and I did go into the newspaper industry, and I've been a reporter now for 2.5 years. And I'm currently at the Stephenville Empire Tribune. So another ironic twist to that, I got to cover the follow-up story 3 years later that I started at Tarleton and in Stephenville for Stephenville's daily paper.
Oh, how terrific. Well, and Julie, tell us about your involvement with the story and what you're doing now.
Well, I also had Dan Malone's writing news writing class last semester, and in it he talked to us about how to write FOIA requests and other open records requests. And so he told me about this story that was up in the air, and so I submitted open records requests and FOIA requests to the DOE and also to our university. And I got rejected when I asked for an expedited request from the DOE. And so he told me, you know, different options I could do to get my request back in their hands. And so I called the Free Attorney General hotline and talked to an attorney, and he said, you know, restate your request, trying to sound more urgent and let people know really what the Clery Act is about, that that's what you're trying to inform your students of. And so I did that, and they still denied me, but they're still getting me more records to come, so we'll have more information still. But we covered it as I covered it as the news editor for the JTAC, and then I also worked with other students in Dan Malone's media writing class right now to do other work on different universities that have also had fines filed against them.
So the essence of this, it sounds like the way you went about it is you compared what the university was telling the Department of Education or was disclosing in its annual report and went and compared it against the actual incident reports and were able to count those up and find a discrepancy. Is that right?
Yes, sir. That is what we did. And that was the project that began in the fall of 2006. And it carried over into some of Dan's classes in the spring of 2007. And those students did a great job following up with that. When we got the original request box, when we got the original request back, there was a box. It was a file box, and it had more than 1,900 pages of police reports in it. And I about passed out when I saw it because I definitely, you know, I mean, it was 3 years worth of records, so I guess when you think about it, that's not that much. But this was something that, you know, the Freedom of Information Foundation and the communications department at Tarleton helped us pay for it because they made us pay over $400 to get access to that information. So, you know, there was a lot of information to sift through, and we sorted them by the crime classifications that the campuses are required to report under the Clery Act and just compared the numbers after we had sorted them.
And Frank, this is kind of a textbook outcome of what we try to accomplish with the Light of Day Project here at the Freedom of Information Foundation. Several times you've heard Dan Malone's name mentioned as a professor there at Tarleton State. He's also a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter and the co-chair of the Light of Day Project. Each year what we try to do is we try to take a topic that will have significance like this one for the university communities all over the state of Texas. Once that advisory committee selects that topic, then an investigation is launched. We help the universities through the communications divisions not only understand how to file an open records request, but to also understand what they might encounter in that, whether it's excessive cost or whether it's being asked what the information is supposed to be used for, which is a violation of the law in and of itself. And by providing the students with hands-on expertise of exactly what to expect, how to analyze the data, how to put it all in a database that can either be used just by that communications journalist on that campus or possibly statewide for a bigger story, we have the outcome that we have here. So I can't emphasize enough that this was a textbook outcome of what we have been trying to do for several years now with the Freedom of Information Foundation, and we've had a lot of good results with topics just like this one.
Well, so do you know, did Professor Malone have some reason to think that a discrepancy like this existed, or was this purely kind of a dumb luck find that that it turned out that the records bore out the suspicions?
Well, this was a topic that – let me just jump in real quick. This was a topic that an advisory committee had chosen without any knowledge that there were any particular violations, to the best of my knowledge.
Very interesting. Describe, Julie and Aaron, at some point, obviously, you're sifting through these records. You've got other classmates helping you do it. And at some point, clearly, there's a light bulb that goes off, and you say, wow, these numbers are not matching up. So describe that process, and then what you did by way of follow-up.
Right. And the information that Tarleton had reported to the Clery Act was something that Malone actually pulled up during our classes, and there was a little speculation, before we actually got the records back, thinking that there might be a discrepancy, because there were several girls in our class that we kind of looked at it, and it said that there were zero sexual assaults on campus, and that was for a three-year period, and I think every college kind of has those horror stories, and sometimes I think parents might tell them to you just so that you're extra careful, but we had heard of at least two cases on campus of possible sexual assaults. So there was kind of a little discrepancy there just between what my classmates had heard and what was being reported. So we knew that there was a chance when we made the request that it may not match up. I don't think that any of us could have ever thought that it was as much as it was, or that such a large fine would come out of it. But, there was a little speculation that, 1 + 1 wasn't equaling 2 there.
Yeah, so clearly at some point you have to have a rather uncomfortable conversation with some people at your university and present this information to them. What kind of reaction or response did you get?
The first one that comes to mind was the chief of police, and that was just a really interesting conversation, and he felt like we were accusing him of not doing his job, and as a 21-year-old college student, I just had the courage to say that's not the case. We're just trying to find out why the numbers aren't matching. And I had one interview with him, and that was the only interview I had with him, because after that he referred me to the vice president for institutional advancement, and his name was Coy Floyd, and that was my contact from that point on. I think some students in the spring semester, the spring of 07, they had a little bit better luck getting to talk to some more people, but they didn't get much information, much more information out of the chief of police at that time than I did.
And then I went and talked to the new Vice President of Institutional Advancement, Rick Richardson, and we also have a new She's in charge of the marketing and communications of Tarleton, Liza Benedict, and I had a meeting with both of them, and they were more forthcoming with information, and I think they are handling it a lot better now than when it first came about.
Right, and I think that's important to point out, too, is this, while this has been, you know, a priceless journalism lesson for the students, I think that it's also been a lesson for the university because they've really had to kind of change the way that they deal with the Clery Act, and they've implemented, you know, a number of things to make sure that something like this doesn't happen again. And the student journalists on campus, you know, have I don't know how to describe it. You know, they've put them in a position where they're going to have to talk about it, and it's good for them, and they're learning to communicate with the media in a more open fashion that could ultimately benefit the university.
So help us understand just the magnitude of what we're looking at here. Let's focus on, because I think the public's most concerned, obviously, about sex crimes and sex offenses. What was the discrepancy between what the public reports were telling people and then what your research actually found?
There were zero reported. There were zero sexual assaults reported, and somewhere in the neighborhood of like 35 burglaries or car break-ins, something on campus. And when but the sexual assaults, we found 11 of them. And there were several reasons that they said they weren't reported. Like some of them said that they were unfounded, and the police department thought, well, if it's unfounded, that means we don't have to report it, and that's not correct. That's not how that law is interpreted. So, you know, it was a big shock because 11, you know, I mean, that's basically
it's a lot more than zero.
To a semester, right.
Yeah.
So it's a lot more than zero. That's correct, yes.
Yeah. So what's been the reaction? We talked about the reaction from administrators. What's been the reaction from the public, the student body, the readership to this series of stories?
Well, the student body isn't the, I guess you'd say, the happiest of that they've been all semester. We're a pretty small campus, and everybody's close-knit, and kind of having, I guess you'd say, our dirty laundry aired to the public didn't make everyone too happy, but I think it was important to make people more aware of what's really happening on campus.
Well, Julie and Aaron, let me ask you, if you're speaking to other college journalists, I'm a journalist at my campus. I'm interested in maybe launching or embarking on a project of this kind at my school. Now that you've been through quite a lot of effort, any advice, any tips, any suggestions for maybe even things that you've learned that you might have done differently in hindsight?
I would say with the FOIA request, any requests that you have to file, stay on them, kind of just, you know, if you do it by email, if you do it by phone, however you do it, just kind of stay in contact with those people and make sure your request isn't just, you know, being pushed to the side, or that the university is just going to hold off until the absolute last day and then just refer you to the Attorney General. I would say just keep in touch with everyone, any professor or journalism instructor who can help you, utilize all your resources to get what you need.
I'm going to echo what Julie said. You know, it's a matter of staying on top of your game and in finding out the resources that are there for you, because there's a lot more there than people might realize at first. And the other thing, as someone who's been in the field for 2.5 years now, you know, don't let anyone intimidate you, because I know that as a college student, walking into a president or a vice president's office can definitely be intimidating. They have a lot more years of experience, and, you know, that's their job. They're, you know, they get paid the big bucks to do their job, and it's hard when you are a student to kind of buck up the courage and ask the tough questions, but it'll make you better in the end, and that's something that being in the workforce that you face daily, because a lot of times the people in your community that you do have to write stories on, sometimes that isn't in such a good light, those are going to be the same people that you run into at the grocery store, that you see at restaurants eating, and you can't have any fear.
So, Julie, it sounds like you're still following this, and that there may be more developments to come. What can you tell us about the reporting that you're doing now, and what we can look forward to learning?
I'm working with dance classes right now. They're kind of all so that other students can be involved in our, in mine and Aaron's experience and know what it was like to deal with all of this. We're working on just researching how safe is Tarleton compared to other campuses, and I'm waiting for results back from the DOE. I don't know if they'll have how much more information they'll be able to provide me than I got from the university, but there you never know what you might find when you file your request. So we're just kind of waiting to get that back.
Sure. Let's turn back to Keith Elkins in closing and ask, do you have any advice for a student journalist who feels that her right to obtain public records is being violated or she's being stonewalled?
Well, I do, but first I'd like to echo the incredible words from Julie and from Aaron, both as tenacious journalists, young journalists, but also I think that it shows that their maturity and their courage in pursuing journalism. And that's the main thing is I'm a reporter myself more than 20 years ago. And one of the things that I learned when I first started reporting was probably one of the wisest lessons given to me is, you know, the business of journalism is not about popularity. It is about informing the public about important events. And you won't always make everybody happy, but if you're fair, you at least engage them in a dialogue. And I think that's what we're really talking about here. As a young journalist, what I would say to anybody that might be listening to this podcast and to yourself, Frank, if you pursue this story or others, is don't hesitate to reach out to other journalists. If there's one thing journalists do, they like to talk about their war stories and about what they've covered and what they encountered, and they like to share their experience with other journalists. Get involved in professional organizations. If you're in Texas, Freedom of Information Foundation of Texas is one of the best I'd highly recommend. But get involved in other groups like the Ethics and Excellence Journalism Foundation, which helped fund the Light of Day project, or the National Freedom of Information Coalition, which has also put up some money for this project. I think that if you get involved in professional organizations, you will realize Investigative Reporters and Editors is another one that comes to mind. That is a wealth of resources, not only for telling you the ABCs of how to go about doing something like this, but also what to do when you encounter trouble. And, you know, you hit on something earlier. It's difficult, especially for young journalists, especially when they go into the dean's office or they go into the records office trying to get information, especially if they're digging around in a topic that they don't want to release those documents from. But, you know, that experience on that college campus is exactly what these two young ladies and journalists all across the country are going to encounter, whether they walk into city halls, county commission offices, or even federal agencies in their pursuit of journalism as a career. So stay on top of it, stay involved, and don't ever give up.
That's wonderful advice, and thanks again for raising Ethics and Excellence in Journalism Foundation in particular. It's a wonderful resource and one that has been supportive of the work of the Student Press Law Center, too. Definitely encourage people to get familiar with their work and with the programs that they support. Thank you for being with us today, Julie Vergel, Aaron Cooper, and Keith Elkins, and for your terrific work helping make Tarleton State and all campuses safer and more transparent places. For college journalists who want to get more active in monitoring campus crime and the activities of their campus law enforcement agencies, we encourage you to visit the SPLC website, www.splc.org, and to email us at splc@splc.org if you'd like a free copy of our updated guide covering campus crime. And check out all of the news and reference materials available at the www.splc.org website. Become a fan of the Student Press Law Center on Facebook and follow SPLC_org on Twitter. If you're a student journalist or a journalism educator with any question about your legal rights, you can call our hotline at 703-807-1904 or email us at splc@splc.org. Thanks for listening.